Hey, everybody, Rob here, and we've got some special coverage here for you about Survivor 40 that we're going to talk with my great friend Shane Powers today. And so this is sort of a last-minute thing that came up. So excited to bring this interview to you. Just want to give you a heads up that there's going to be some adult language in this. I mean, it's Shane. It's Shane. You know what you're getting here with Shane. So just want to give you a heads up in case that you're listening with any of the kids around or anything like that. So parental discretion strongly advised. And then I also want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Bet Online. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, as they're bringing the Vegas to you. If you're missing the NFL, no problem. BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations that you can wager on. Probably a lot more exciting than actual Jets games for me. If you're into entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, American Idol, stock prices, even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, and it's all open 24 hours a day and all online. Of course, after the episode, get ready for Thursday's NFL draft. We've got a special segment. Ross Tucker is going to be talking you through his preview of the top 10 picks for the NFL draft presented by BetOnline. That's going to be after the show. Visit the website or use your mobile device and join today to receive your new welcome bonus for BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, Podcast One, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code podcast1 for your sign up bonus. Visit betonline.ag and don't forget that promo code podcast1 for your sign up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we have a treat for you here because we have some bonus coverage here during this Survivor season. Whenever I get a message from this man, I'm always excited, especially when he wants to talk about Survivor. And it's not every season that he's following the show, but we are blessed because season 40, Shane Powers is watching, and Shane Powers wants to talk about what's going on in Survivor Winners at War. And we'll probably talk about much more, maybe even Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski on his beloved Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Here is the great host of The Shane Show, Shane Powers. Shane, how are you?
I'm really good. And I called you because I think I've done, I've really watching the show, and I'm watching the season intently. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited about it. I'm fully in. And I was like, fuck, I want to talk about all these motherfuckers. And I want to go through all of them. And I want to talk about their games. And I'm fully in.
Great.
1,000%.
Great.
There's many seasons that I have not. I don't think I watched last season at all.
Yeah, you didn't miss
that. That's the one where the guy didn't even play and won?
The guy didn't play? Who?
What was the one where the guy didn't even play?
Oh, no, that was two seasons ago. That was Chris.
That
was Chris. He came in off
Chris?
The edge. Yeah.
Who's Chris?
It's a good point. He came in off the edge, and then he ended up winning the season. That's the whole thing. But let me just ask you before we get into Survivor. I know that you had posted recently that you had tested positive for the coronavirus, but you may have had it and didn't even realize it.
Well, here's the deal. There was a thing that went out. It was a mass email that in the county was doing some testing. So I went to an LA County testing site, got a test. Email came back a few hours later. And they said, yo, you're positive. And I was a little tripped out. I'm like, holy shit. Okay. I've tested positive for the coronavirus. Now that means I either have it or I've had it in the past, but the antibody's in there and it's rolling around. So I was a little bit over the weekend. I was a little more freaked out because of the mass hysteria or what we're reading. And and again, this is a very serious thing that we all need to be taking seriously. And we've got to be doing what we're doing, but there is you think to yourself, oh fuck. Okay. I have the coronavirus or I had it and you start to kind of take the weekend and go, am I getting my lungs? And then you're feeling psychosomatic symptoms. And all that starts in your head. And a lot of people have already had this, Rob. Mm-hmm. Millions and millions of people have had it and didn't know they had it. I think a lot of people got the flu in January, because I got it in January, and it was really, it was like a 3.5 week flu, and it felt like it wasn't going to go away, and it felt like the flu, but different. That's the only way I can explain it. Exhausted.
Now, I know a lot of people that have had similar, like, in February, I had this thing, and I couldn't get rid of it.
So, listen, millions and millions of people have had it. This is my take on it in a nutshell. It is the 21st century's version of the flu, like in 1918. We as a society have never had this going around in our bodies. We're gonna lose a bunch of people like in the first wave because we weren't ready for it. Our bodies weren't immune. But as we start to build up immunities and as we get a vaccine and as we do the thing, it will become something that's not scary to get. It's just something that we live with.
But that's a long way from now.
Well, I think that we've done a really good job of making sure we didn't have a run of 40 million people that needed hospital beds,
right?
Which is the flattening of the curve. And I fully back. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. I know that there's like, I don't know how this is possible, but in our political climate, we have even made this a political issue, which is insane. The pandemic is partisan. Like some people, whatever the fucking doctors and the scientists are saying, how about we just follow that?
Yeah, sounds good.
That's it.
I just want to make sure that people aren't misinterpreting what you're saying. Like, hey, it's not a big deal because
it definitely is. But I also want to bring it. It's not. There are people that that walk around in their houses and they don't leave, and the Clorox wipes and the thing, and it's important to be smart. But it's also just as important not to be
crazy.
So insane.
Yeah.
Because your quality of life is your quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right, Shane. So very nice to get a chance to talk some Survivor.
Hold on real quick.
Yeah.
I don't want to interrupt. I know I interrupt you a lot.
No, you're good.
I want to congratulate you on your 20-year thing. That was very nice.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that with you because I wanted to say how much it meant to me that we were at the 10-year anniversary party, and I got a lot of feedback that night that you were really – people said you were a hero. You were the voice of the person listening at home where there was a lot of – I think that we could have managed that better. We had all these people in the bullpen that didn't really get to watch the episode, and so there was a lot of chatter. We had some tech issues. You got up there and you said, hey, everybody, listen, this guy's trying to put on a show. Like, let's stop talking.
Well, I got frustrated. I mean, you've done a lot for that community. I mean, you've given those people a lot, and they were trying to listen to you and Steven do a show. And I think there's a lot of the ex-survivors were sitting off in the corner, and they were making a lot of noise, and they were hammered and
they were drunk, flirting
and I was like, man, I was actually sitting in there with him, and then I got uncomfortable because I don't want to be a part of the loudness. So then I walked over to the left and I was like, I'm going to watch the show here. And then the fucking noise from these assholes was so loud.
Right.
That I was like, you know what? You fucking Survivor creeps. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
These people were trying to watch a show.
It meant a lot to me. One, that you were there. You were really sweet about that. You wanted to be there to see the show. And that when you got up and took the microphone, that really meant a lot to me. And it still does. So I just want to thank
you
again.
I'm very proud of you. You've done a very, very good job, man.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of you. I have massive respect. And I did not make it easy on you when you first started doing this. And I just, it's important for me to back you.
Yeah.
That's all.
All right. Well, that's all ancient history from the past. Anyway, so I'm excited. The last time you and I got to talk Survivor, that you had watched Survivor Ghost Island, and you were very much, you liked how Dominic and Wendell and Laurel, Donathan, that seemed like that was a crew that stuck together. And it seemed like that you really admired that particular group. And now it's been a couple of years since we got to talk about a Survivor season. And so tell us, for Winners at War, are you enjoying season 40?
I'm enjoying the shit out of this. First of all, is that the one? Was that the name of the one with Dominic and
Ghost
Wendell?
Ghost Island? Yeah.
Ghost Island. And what was the ghost? Oh, this, I don't remember.
It was old stuff. Old stuff was like, oh, like it's Shane's Blackberry. Now it's an idol.
It now would not be Shane's BlackBerry, but yes. Okay, great. So yes, I watched that season and I liked the old school style of playing, which is we're all going to stay together. It doesn't matter what goes on. They can try to do whatever they want to do to try and break us up. The show, the players, I like their style. This version or this Winners at War, the show has changed dramatically since I've played it.
Yes.
I've also, on a personal level, I've sworn off focusing on the negative of Van Wegerenen and Probst.
Yeah.
I have this thing that I've been doing, and I feel better, right? I have a better flow going on in my life.
Yeah. Can you talk about that at all? What are you doing differently?
Yeah, of course. A couple years ago, there are dudes that really get under my skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a guy named Scooter Braun, who's this big manager guy. And he would get under my skin based on the way that he behaved and shit that he would do. And I would just was all over him. And a couple years ago, I was like, you know what? On January 1st, my New Year's resolution is we're all human beings. Jeff Probst isn't evil. That's for sure. He's a very good guy. I focus on the bad. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to spend a year focusing on all of the good shit that Jeff does.
Mm-hmm.
And see how that figures out of my life. I did that with Scooter. Last year I did Scooter.
This year,
our relationship got better. Things got cooler. It was much more pleasant. So this year I was like, I'm going to do that with Jeff. Cause I fucking ride Jeff, man. I was fucking hard on that guy.
Yeah.
Super hard. And whether that's fair or not fair, I was just like, I'm not going to be hard on him. I'm just going to chill.
Yeah.
And it's been nicer. He was actually on a flight with an old buddy of mine, Zahn McLaurin, the actor guy who made, and they had a nice chat and they, you know, were talking that both were agreeing that I'm a crazy person, which is fair. But I've had a nicer experience with the show.
Yeah.
Watching the show, enjoying the show. And I'm also older, man. I'm a little softer. It's like, I'm not trying to be a fuck. I'm not trying to fight people. And B, I'm just not. I'm the edge is coming off of me a little bit. I mean, a little bit.
But you had a lot to lose.
What do you mean I had a lot to lose?
A lot of edge to lose.
I do. I've had a lot of edge.
You could be half as edgy and still be very edgy.
Thank you. Anyway.
Okay.
I watched the show. Yes. I'm watching the show. The show is not, it's different. It's not the Survivor that I played. It's definitely not the Survivor that you played.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that it's not Survivor. It's just a version of Survivor that I don't know.
Yeah.
The idols and the things and the stuff and the, now we've got money and if you just take it as, see, I used to go, that's fucking crazy and that's not really Survivor and fuck that. But if you look at the game as the game right now in this season, it is a game of some sort. And they call it Survivor, and there's a lot going on, and it's fascinating to watch how people navigate this shit. It is.
Okay.
And I got my favorites, and there's people, and again, if I have opinions about anybody on the show, if I don't know you, it's only because of what the show has shown me.
Yeah.
Right? I'm a fan just like you, not like you, but you know, I have relationships with characters like Tony or, you know, like people that I don't know.
All right, so let's talk about some of these players. And I know from following you for a long time that you do have some favorites. And I know that you are very fond of Jeremy Collins, who's out there this season. I know that's probably one of the motivators for you for why you wanted to watch this season in the first place. And I always remember with you and Jeremy Collins when you guys were both in the running for Survivor Second Chance, and then he got on and you didn't. And you kissed him on the head, and that propelled him. That love
my
from
kiss
Shane
got him the mill. There's no doubt.
Yes.
By the way, he's still a little weirded out about that. He's a very man's man, Boston fireman.
Yes.
So you don't kiss dudes. I mean, like I think when I reached in, he was like, "Hey, California guy, relax with the fucking kiss." Like he's kind of. But I'm like a blue collar Irish kid from Omaha. We kiss each other.
Yeah.
We kiss and hug and, you know, I should have kissed his ass on the lips. That really would have freaked him out. How about this? Jeremy's game is super, it's tricky and clever. And I don't think he's a super likable guy, right? And he's a challenge beast. and he's not dumb. And there is this sort, it's not a slide by kind of game. It's just, it's interesting to watch his game develop. I think he's got trouble.
Yeah.
And I'm bummed out because okay. I think that, especially after the family visit, he has the most dramatic or interesting family of all. And listen, that's got to be something if you've got your kid mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, that's the cooler family. Yeah. Like all that. They're not going to let him win the money, or they're not going to let him get to the final because of the amount of children that fucking guy has.
So,
would you?
Yeah, I was surprised they let him get to the end the first time, and now he has a bigger family, and they're all out there, and he goes last. Do you think does that make a difference? You know, when the survivors are out there, and it's like, okay, and now he's the grand finale. He's like the last because they know he's got like the biggest group of people that are out there to come see him and kids and teenagers
for
and
sure
Val.
And that absolutely isn't not work to his advantage now mm-hmm. again he might have been first and they might have cut it differently. I think they
went by because this season it was like, all right, go join your family over there, so he's all by himself.
Right How about this? He stole my move. He went to his knees because I think in the family visit I dropped to my knees when I saw my kid. There is something, because I went last, but one of the big storylines of my season was my relationship with my kid.
Yes.
But there is this feeling of like, wait a minute, why does fucking it seem like Shane loves his family more than I love my, like there is all that going on.
Survivors are haters. You know this.
They are. They're trying to create shit.
Yeah. And so Shane, do you not get enough credit for being the person who really, you know, changed the loved one's visit where you had in season 12, Boston comes out to see you. That's the first time a minor comes out on the loved one's visit. Now we have this season where now it's all kids.
Well, how about this? I will say this. It's a dangerous scenario. First of all, Season 12 and season 40 are different. Those dudes have that shit running like a well-oiled machine. They've got everybody protected. I was watching those young kids the other night. And Boston, I remember when I saw Boston when he came out, and he was at this point was the youngest family person ever to come out on the show, and it was a big part of my storyline, my missing him, and he was pretty riled up by it emotionally. Yeah. Right, like it was the first time he'd seen his dad, who's this immortal being in his eyes, see him weak, see him fucked up, see him like not look like it. There was some emotional stuff for I don't know if being 5 years old and being out and having that experience is the best thing for you. I don't have a judgment one way or the other about whether you have your children out there or not. But had I had to do it all over again, I don't think I would have had Boston come out because, you know, further down the line, they would always hit us and go, yo, you and Boston want to play blood versus water, right? Anytime there was a blood versus water, they were like, you guys want to come do this? And I would be like, there's no way. I would never play this thing with my son. But then I would bring it up to him and go, you wouldn't have any interest in playing, would you? He's like, never. I don't. He has really bad feelings about Survivor. And I think it has to do with that experience when he was 12. I don't think he was 11 or 12. He was about to turn 12.
Yeah. So I feel like that maybe that middle age is probably like, I think that, you know, that if he was older, I feel like that they think it's cool, and younger, I feel like they don't really get it, but I do feel like that. And I don't think there were any kids that were in that sort of like, 10, 11, 12 area where they sort of like know enough to know what's going on, but, like don't know that like you're necessarily okay. But yeah, that's a really good point.
Would you let your children come out?
I think I would, but I definitely understand that they would be freaked out. Like, I did feel like that the kids seemed like a little bit, you know, taken aback to see their parents. Like, the kids are smart. They know, wait, you don't look right. What's going on? Why are you crying? So it can be traumatic.
Correct. And listen, I don't have a judgment one way or the other about, but it was something that rang with me when I was watching it. I was like, man, I don't know if I'd want my 8-year-old. 12 is a little bit Also, I did get to spend a decent amount of time with Boston. Like after we got to go wherever, I had like 24 hours with him. So he was able to sort of.
You went to Michael Bolton's house.
Is that where I went? Is that his house?
I think
is that
was
Michael Bolton's
because
house?
I went to that house when before the All-Stars. that was the house. It's like Michael Bolton's dad's house or something like that. That's what they told us whose house it was.
That's bizarre. Yeah. But anyway, Michael Bolton's gnat infested fucking vacation home in Panama. What a terrible purchase. Anyway, I had a full 18 hours for Boston to realize.
Yeah.
Oh, dad's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If he'd have just seen me for like 20 minutes, like let's say I would have lost and everybody would have been like, you just get the wave and say goodbye. He would have walked out of there going, what the fuck's going on with my dad?
Right.
I don't. Anyway, it was just something that I was fascinated.
Is that when you got voted out also? And that's, is that the same
the next
round?
Day.
The next day. Yeah.
Day 33.
And was that in any way because of what happened on the loved one's visit? Was there any, sort of it? Like,
No, I had made, it was a different time. Like I had made my bed and I had created a law for myself, which is I'm not going back on the word of my child. Mm-hmm. And I set a moral thing for me that I wasn't willing to cross, and other people set that and were willing to cross it. So the moral code thing is something that's very interesting about Survivor and always really fascinating to watch, but that's not even really a storyline anymore. Like there's no dilemma that they're pitching. It's like, they want
willing
you
to do
that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they want you to do whatever you're supposed to do, I guess, to win.
Because you and I remember very vividly from one of our past conversations, you had said a line about that you feel like that the person with the lowest moral code is the person that will win the game of Survivor. Do you still feel like, I know it's not a big part of the show, but do you still feel like that in its heart that's what it takes and that's what we'll see happen in this season?
Well, I feel, again, in the absence of law, right? And Survivor has no laws.
Yeah.
In the absence of law, the person with the lowest moral code in that situation has the upper hand, right? Like I swore on my kid's life, which was stupid because I then mm-hmm. boxed myself into a corner, and that law was not, that wasn't a law. That was something that we all created as a law. And so if Suri goes, I swear on my kids, and Aris goes, I swear on my whatever, and then they go and they cross that line, that line is fair to cross because that's within the realm of the game. However, their moral code allowed them to do that. And I would not have done that.
Yeah.
Because that was the law that I had set for myself. And my moral code would not allow me to go back on that because that's how we created the comfort and the safety in order to get us as far as like I would never have gone back on my word because I was honoring what was that got us there. Mm-hmm. And listen, Suri and I are very close.
Yeah.
It's 15 years later. And Aris and I are close when he's not dropping ayahuasca. And so
I'm talking to him later this week.
Oh, you are? It'll be great. it'll be fine. Within the frame of, listen, I'm happy with the way that I played my mm-hmm. game. And my son is happy with the way that I played my game. And I think that they, you know, I know that Suri feels bad. I know that Aris feels bad. I mean, I don't know about today, but they did. I mean, it was fucked up.
If you had gotten voted back in on the second chances, would you have had that same moral code and come back and played the same way? Or would you have changed the way that you approached the game in season 31?
I think I probably would have made it. I don't know. I don't know what I would have done. I mean, I thought about that a lot because I really thought I was going to play. Mm-hmm. I thought I was a lock. And so I was thinking about how to use that as some kind of a weapon. I might have looked at people and say at the beginning and been like, I'm not giving my word to nobody, period. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to make that clear because that's what fucked me last time. And then maybe have used it and just said, listen, I made a whole big thing about it. You know, this is real. And then maybe fucked it. I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah.
I just know that it would have depended on the situation. And also, this is a lot of money, right?
Mm-hmm. $2 million.
Well, this one's $2 million, but $1 million, it's like 630, $1,000 cash in your bank account. Yep. For some people, that is a life-changing amount of money. There are some people that it will change their children's lives based on, you know, their lifestyle and how they live. Like, it's far be it for me to have someone think, okay, after 20 days, I've known this dude 3 weeks, fuck him, I'm going trying to get the money. Like, I get all of the different scenarios about it and about the it's fascinating to me to watch people have this experience. I mean, Jeremy has a lot of children. There are other people there that that seem like they don't have a ton of money. For me, money has never really been what's driven me, and that's probably was a big hole in my game. I don't know, to be honest.
When you say it's a big hole in your game, that you're not driven by money, that if you would have been like more like eye on the prize, that would have been something that's better for you as a survivor?
I think that if the money is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Or that's the biggest reason why you're playing. It would have been fun to win $1 million, but at the end of the day, I didn't need the $1 million. I had a great job and my kid was good, and I knew that we were always going to be okay, and we lived pretty great lives. Yeah. And so money's a very big deal to people. Money's a very big deal to that Tony dude. I mean, that Tony dude.
Yeah.
To this day is still mind-blowing to me how anybody ever fucking speaks to him or takes anything that guy says seriously. Like, I wouldn't trust one thing that guy says ever.
Because of his first season.
Yeah, the guy swore on his badge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. Isn't that a code? I mean, if I was a cop, I'd never speak to that guy again. Isn't there something about your badge and, like, the fraternity of your... And again, maybe that's just where I come from. That's just I would never trust anything that guy says. Did he say he's swearing his grandmother, his dead mother?
No. I believe it was his father, and that way. And it did come up in the final tribal council that Trish, who he had played with, had asked him, like, do you regret it? Would you? And he said he didn't. And he went on to win. So I think that you can compartmentalize that kind of stuff. But I think that's what's fascinating about the game is you have people like you who would never do something like that. I would feel uncomfortable with stuff like that. I would hate to be put in a position where to go out there and it's like, hey, do you swear on your wife? Do you swear on your kids? It's like, come on, man. And then what do? You say no, I wouldn't do that. Like, wow, why not? You're lying to me. Let me vote you out. Or then you say yes, and now it's like.
So you think that should not be allowed to be in the game?
I think not allowed is hard to enforce that. It's just I don't like that about Survivor. It's just such a quick thing. You swear on your family?
Would you? How about this? Well, if you swore on your children's lives, would you go against it?
Boy. You know, I think you'd face that decision, and you wouldn't know until you're there. And maybe this is like shooting myself in the foot, like hypothetical day down the road. I think you have to, there's no alternative than to say yes. And then you have to just keep reassessing that information. I'm not a superstitious person. I don't believe that something bad happens, but just the idea of it. But you're doing it for your children also. You're trying to win for your children.
So this is how you would handle it. This is how I would handle it. Literally first night on the beach, I would just say, listen, I'm not doing that. Don't ask me. I'm not swearing. I did it in 12. I'm not getting into that because it's too weird. And I more so not even for me, because if I said it, you can bank it. I just don't want to be disappointed in people that give me their word and go back on it. Like, I just won't play that. So don't ask. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
And then walk through it. We'll figure out another way for you to trust me, but I'm not doing that one.
Yeah.
Because I would never do that again, ever.
I just think it comes across like, and I could understand where you have this gravitas where I think people would not push back on it. But I feel like if I say that to people, it's like, boy, that's really shady. Why? So why won't you swear on your family? Why won't what? Like, what? Oh, because you're going to lie about it. That's why.
I feel like you're going back. Are you going back?
I mean, it's not something that I really clamor for. You know, I do. I allow myself to think about it, but I just feel like that there's so many people that I think would be so invested in seeing me do poorly at this point. I just think that there's like so many people that would love to dunk on me between the players. I feel like the show would like that. It's hard for me to imagine the scenario where I go and are not out like in the first couple of days.
Is it fun, though, to be in a position where you would go to play the game and not have it really be about the money? Yes, the money would be fine, but you don't need the money, right?
The money wouldn't be the primary motivator to, you know, to go and play again.
Which would be a whole nother different, because you were probably going for the money when you were a kid, right?
I think I was going for attention.
The experience.
Yeah, not right. Experience. I think I wanted to be on TV.
On TV.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I was 23 years old. I turned 24 right before I played. I didn't know what $1 million was. I lived with my parents. You know, I didn't have bills. Right. You know, I didn't have like if you're somebody and you are like going to working 60 hours a week and you have a family and kids, and it's like you're the money means something to you. I was 24. The money didn't mean anything to me. And even when I played the second time, it was never about money for me to play.
So for Suri, I've had an easier time understanding why she did what she did with me, because she's got a real life with a husband and children. And she was 30 and it was like a whole thing. Aris was doing it to win. Like he sold his own shit out, which is a whole nother kind of level of like, because Aris is many things and he puts himself out as we all have a brand or a show that everybody watches and, you know, but I had a less of a time getting over Suri after understanding, or when you get a step back, you take a look at it. I don't know why we got off talking. Let's talk about the fucking show.
Okay, let's. But hey, this is all interesting. No,
I know. People love the. I get it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you said that Jeremy, you felt like that he's in a bad spot now. So he had the safety without power. He leaves that tribal council now. I want to know that with you feeling the way that you feel, and I know I listen to you talk about sports and how you feel about being part of a team, how you felt about Dominic and Wendell and Laurel and Donathan, I can't imagine you ever leaving your allies behind at a tribal council, even if you felt like you were in danger.
Again, it's a different game than the one I played.
Mm-hmm.
I created a thing where like there were six of us and I was like, listen, we're all going to stay together. It's a crazy fucking batch of us. We're all nuts. We're all going to have our infighting, but we're a team. We came here as a team. We're going to pay gong or knock these dudes out and then we'll fight it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was I was the one person that really made sure that happened. Whether these other five or six want to say that or not, they're lying. This is a different game. Yeah. Nobody's really had any sort of. Are there any has there been one four-person tight, like, here we are? I mean, you say last week, but not really for, like, less than 5 days.
Yeah, I don't know if we have, like, five Jeremy and Denise and Kim, they seem like they came into the merge together, and it seemed like that they picked up Tyson. Tyson has a relationship with Kim and Denise. Michelle got lumped in with them. I'm not really sure how that happened, but... Jeremy saw the writing on the wall and he leaves, and now this other group is sort of like left behind to pick up the pieces.
And those five people, when he was supposed to stay with them, they have not had the requisite amount of time on an island to build a cohesive team unit together. Like our tribe, Kasaya, we spent the better part of that first 15 days before the merge, like everyone laughing at us and thinking that we were coming together and winning challenges, like that, you get life experience with each other and you've got 15 days with each other, which is a long time out there. You're like, oh shit, we've stayed together and this has worked. So I'll continue to do that. This thing that they have, this five person thing that he walked out on, has not had any time to cement or like grow roots, or they've not been a situation where they've looked at each other and been like, oh, okay, we're safe because the five of us, it was too, it's all just so much mishmash and moving and shifting and ranging. And it's just too chaotic. I would find one fucking person and go, we can't ask anything more than this. I wouldn't even go three in this new version. You just be like, me and you got to figure this out. Like, you go find one person, I go, but anything past that, because Jeremy was like, Jeremy made the right move. Did he not?
Seems like it. I'm not sure necessarily where it goes from here, where now he left, Tyson's gone, and now he's left with Kim and Denise and potentially Michelle. We really don't know where she lands in all of this.
And what is the thing about the whispering at the council?
Yeah.
When does that go away?
I don't think it goes away. I think that either one of the things that I think is a silver lining about, you know, this really terrible situation that we're in right now is Survivor would have already filmed another season at this point had it not been for the delays because of coronavirus. And I think that Survivor is in a point creatively where they're going to get to see this whole season play out. They're going to get to not only like watch the reaction to this, but they're also going to get a chance to digest everything that they're doing and sort of like really sit with it for a while of what do we want to do here? You know, we're sort of at a point where, and it's such a interesting point to sort of like put a bookmark in the book and close it for a while of like 40 seasons. And when they pick things back up, and who knows what is it in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whenever, they really have a chance to sort of like really take a good long look at what they want to be doing. And this whispering, I think that it's exciting when you're on the field with it and like, oh, okay, all right, there's a lot of movement, a lot of stuff happening, but we didn't even really know what was happening before the whispering. And then there was whispering. Now it's just like a shell game. Now it's like, okay, like what? Where are we following the action to? Who are we worried for? And then we just like just spin a wheel at that point.
Well, also, yeah, you can't ask me to invest 47 minutes of my life in something and give me clues about where it's going, and then have it not really. It's bad storytelling on some level. I mean, yes. If I was a producer, I would be like, this is gets weird. Because we're leading people somewhere and we're having a beginning and a middle and an end to a story for the hour. And then the whole thing can just get changed. But there might be a cool rule where like, listen, anything you want to say, you got to say openly and publicly.
Yeah.
That way you and I can follow when we're watching. It adds more drama. It creates more fucking emotionality. Because if I'm like, listen, let's fucking vote this guy off.
Yeah.
Four of us, right? Like, that way, because then it just more
let it everything be fluid, that's out there, but say it out loud.
Correct. I think they should make the whispering be a no-go because it's ridiculous.
It's played out. I think it was exciting when it first happened, but now we like that it can change up. But we don't like being in the dark of wondering what people are saying the whole time.
Also, when Jeremy decides to leave, he's probably looking at the situation and going, all nine of these motherfuckers are willing to move and change like that. So I'm out. I feel danger. I've got three more days to now to move. And because it's fluid. There's nothing that's locked in this new version of Survivor. Those five people could decide to just go do something else in 3 days. That's what this game is about now. It's a fluidity thing. It's like an amoeba.
I know one of your other favorites on this season is Sarah Lucina, and I think that Sarah has had more of a spotlight in this season than she had even in the season that she won last time in Game Changers. How do you think that Sarah has done so far this season?
I think she's done great. I really, first of all, we're both from the Midwest, right? I grew up in Nebraska. She grew up, I think she's in Iowa.
Iowa, yeah.
So there's the weird Midwest, like, Denise, which one's Denise is the one that made the crazy move.
Yep.
And I thought she was a lesbian and she isn't.
She's not.
I know. I feel bad. She's very sexy. I mean, she's a very beautiful woman. I didn't mean anything other than she just looks like a lesbian. Does she not?
Shane, back to Sarah Lucina.
Well, I mean, it's not a bad thing. I mean, I look like, okay, all right, anyway. She did. I thought she was a lesbian. I think the I think the comment was, fuck, I hope that if you're straight or something like I. And then I found out she has a husband, yeah, and he's a very lucky guy because she's great. But anyway,
the best.
Backtrack.
Yes.
This is a new Shane. Backtrack.
That's fine.
Usually I double down.
Tell me about Sarah Lucina. And
I really like Sarah. Yes. First of all, I got to know Sarah a little bit playing a fantasy football league.
Yeah. It's a good league. Yes.
Was a good league. I think you were in it. Were you not?
Yeah, I won it.
Oh, right. I forgot. You won it because of Godwin. It was in the eighth round. Because you knew that Godwin was...
eighth round. The fourth round.
Oh, you knew Godwin was going to be the... You knew he was going to be the third best receiver in football?
I didn't know it was going to be that good.
That's a dart at a wall that paid off.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think I had the worst... Like the worst draft ever came in.
And Lamar Jackson.
Why? But I knew Lamar. The signs were on the wall. If you know football, you knew Lamar was going to be the best player in football this year. And everybody laughed at me for taking him in the sixth round.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Okay.
Sarah, I have an affinity for because we're both from the Midwest. I understand. So I understand where she's coming from a little bit. But you watch her last game where she won. And then you watch this game and you're like, fuck, this broad is so unassuming. And that's a lot of it has to do with Midwestern people are, I am different than the norm, but most Midwestern people are unassuming, hardworking, blue collar, like, you know, they have their, and she's got all of that in her, but there's also this, like, you just look at her and you're like, oh, she's like there's like this over, like she's able to have this like weird, however she continues to be not threatening is unbelievable because she's the most threatening presence in the game and nobody knows it. Like she is doing at will what she wants to be doing.
Well, let me disagree with you. I think they knew it and they forgot it. That they, before the season, Dalton Ross asked every single one of these people, all right, here's a marker. Write down who you're going to vote out. And four or five of them all said, oh, Sarah. Don't trust Sarah. I'm not messing with that. And then,
okay, but their forgetting has nothing to do with them. It's got everything to do with the way that she plays the game.
Yes, she's really been able. We've seen so much more of her social game, I feel like, in this season, where she's won all these people over, where it does not seem like that people seem super threatened by her. If anything,
that's
they
not
say,
by accident.
Yeah.
She's doing something. She's got a little bit of the Sandra game, although I really do believe Sandra is the luckiest Survivor player of all time. She's definitely the most overrated. She's won twice. That you cannot take that away from her, but there is a strange, she gets way more credit than she deserves. Sarah does not get any credit. Mm-hmm. And plays a similar game, but is also deeply, deeply ingrained in what's happening. Her game is sick.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy Sarah's game, and I enjoy Jeremy's game a lot too. The who's left?
Okay, there's nine people left. There are so we've talked about Jeremy and Sarah. The people that voted with Sarah last time was Sophie.
Mm-hmm. I like her too. Mm-hmm. She can win. She's got this a little bit of the same thing, but she's got a little bit more of a desire to like not be in control of things. Sarah's directing the game. She is. And Sophie's along for the ride a little bit in the way that Sandra is. But again, Sophie will also step up and make a move, I think, if she has to.
Okay. Ben is with them.
I don't even. Oh, Ben's the cowboy. He's been great. Who is that guy?
He's in the fantasy football league too.
Got it. I didn't watch his season. What a fucking lovely human being he is.
Yeah,
he's been a treat to watch the whole time. I would have no problem with him winning. He's been great. Mm-hmm. He's in our fantasy league.
Yeah.
Oh well, fuck. There you go, Ben. Yeah. You've been a fucking treat. He's been great.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I got no problem with Ben.
Yeah. Ben also with them. Was on this last vote that it was Sarah, Tony, that you mentioned. You don't love Tony.
Oof, I really have a problem with Tony, and yeah. I've never met Tony, and I don't want, here's the deal, I don't, Rob Sis, or not Rob, not Sestrinino, Rob Mariano.
You're not a fan.
The worst, he's the fucking worst creep of all time.
Because of Survivor All-Stars.
The fucking worst. There's not a bigger fucking maggot on earth than Rob Mariano.
Now, do you say that now? Are you say this as a friend of Lex or as a Survivor viewer?
Well, no, I watched the show.
Yeah.
I was deeply watching it at that point. Yes. And then when all that went down and he was like, save my girl. And then Lex did that. Yeah. And then fucking he voted Lex out.
Yes.
That was fucking dark. Just as, on the show.
Yeah. And that's that same thing you're talking about. Moral
and
code.
I was like, right. You're a fucking maggot for doing that. Right. And then I become friends with Lex. And this is the part I don't know if fans understand or not. And the fucking people that buy the, you know, the whatever the fuck that your what's the shit's called?
Patrons.
Patrons. Yeah. It would be like if, and Lex and Rob were fucking best friends off the island from meeting on the show. They were fucking family. They were tight off the show.
Yeah.
Terry and I are family. We're tight off the show. You and I are friends. We're not family, but we're friends. I know your wife. I met your kids. I root for you. We have a relationship outside of Survivor, right? If you and I were to be playing Survivor and I asked you to save my girl and you did, I would have been doing that based not on the game, but on the things that we do outside the game. Okay. And then I look at you and fuck you over and vote you out.
Mm-hmm.
That's a level of sociopathic and dark. That's fucked up. That dude is a dark, dark individual.
Yeah.
And he always will be. He is a self-important, self-gratifying, self-involved maggot. He is.
I think that that's too hard. I really do.
Of course, you do.
I get it. And you know, look, I got voted out by that guy in that same game, and I felt like I had a personal relationship with Rob that I had been to. I had been to his house a couple of weeks ago before the game played. You know, I hung out with him probably, you know, 7 or 8 times, like in the summer leading up to that. And I felt like we had a relationship and I got, you know, voted out. So I'm totally like, I'm not nearly, it was as tight as him and Lex, but I definitely, and it hurt. Like it took me a really long time to get past that. But, I just, you know, go back to,
would you have done that to him?
Boy, that's really tough. Like, I think I'm probably not in the same way, but
I would not have done that to you.
Yeah.
I could not have, I fucking like your wife, dude.
Yeah.
Your wife is and your children.
Yes.
You've invited me into your home.
What I would say is that I would not have done it the same way that Rob did to Lex, but my plan was, hey, like, if I'm gonna hang out with Rob here for a while, and then when we get to the merge, people are gonna want to vote him out. So that's gonna be great for me when he gets knocked out of the way. So
but the situation when he asked him to keep that brought in.
I understand.
Fucking dark. That dude's the darkest motherfucker on earth.
I think you could say that. Look, I don't like the guy, but I think that there are, first off, that you know very well, there are very very very, like, to compare anything that goes on in Survivor to like anybody on Earth is like really is way too far. But point taken that you're not a fan.
I got news for you. If Terry and I were on that game,
yeah,
I'm second telling chances. You right now or whatever. 15.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Him and I wouldn't do that. It doesn't matter. I don't give a fuck. If I have to go, I would go before I fucking turned on him.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't happen. Like, that dude is the thousands of conversations and it's just not like, where is the game and the thing? Well, you've got to decide for yourself if you're a fucking dark person or not. And Rob is a dark human.
Mm-hmm.
He is. You'll never get me off
it. I won't get you off it, but I do think that there's a difference between what you do as a human and maybe what you might do, when you get, you know, in between the lines on the Survivor. And I think that what you're saying, what your point is that there's no difference. There's no difference between what you do in Survivor and what you do in your real life. And that's why you're talking about stuff like with Tony and with Rob and with people that give their word in the game. It's may not be the same as when you're not in the game.
We're arguing two different things. 16 people come in, they don't know each other.
Yeah.
They fuck each other over, right? It's one thing or this, that, or the other. That's one thing. People that have enriched friendships and have called upon each other in times of need, in their own personal lives, when they use that intimacy and they bring it into the game and then sell that intimacy out, that is fair within the game.
Yeah.
But then that also defines somewhat who you are as a person.
I agree 100%.
Great. Perfect.
Okay. All right. Tell me about, you have any thoughts on Nick?
I don't even know. I still don't know who that is.
Yeah.
he's like the wormy new guy.
Yeah.
Right? He's like the new winner.
Yeah. He won this one of the seasons that you didn't see, David versus Goliath. He was one of the Davids.
Yeah. He will never win.
Mm-hmm.
He has zero shot of winning.
Is that an edit thing? Why do you say
nobody? No, nobody takes nobody's. First of all, no winner in a winner at war season. That dude cannot be the winner of the winners of war. He can't. Like, it's just, if it's bad for the brand, right? Like, they gotta have somebody with some kind of a thing. It could be Tony,
more clout,
right?
Yeah,
it's gotta have more of like a this guy, and no one takes this guy seriously. Everyone's just using this dude to get themselves one step further, and he'll get clipped whenever he won't win. There's no way. I didn't even know he was a winner. Like, when I was watching the show, I was like, oh, that's going to be fun. And fuck, she's great. And oh, fuck, that'll sit. Who the fuck is this guy? Did they leave the stunt double in?
Well,
I was like, where's the winner?
Who's not here that you think should have been here as somebody who's followed the show, especially like the first half, very closely?
Well, first of all, let's talk about what you friends with Ethan, all these cats, right?
Yeah.
This old school, new school thing. It's interesting that the old school people just got clipped out quick, but that's because they weren't ready for this version of Survivor.
I disagree with that.
Me through that.
Okay. Well, I feel like that there was a couple of people where there were sort of like extenuating circumstances. Like Danny got voted out by the other people that were old school. It wasn't like Rob and Parvati and Ethan were like, oh, we don't know what we're doing. Let's vote out our friend. Maybe Danny, the pace of the game might have been too much for her, but I don't like Ethan and Parvati and Rob and these people, like, you know, Yule. It's not that the pace of the game was too fast for them. You know, Ethan got knocked out because he was friends with Rob, and Amber got knocked out because she was married to Rob. You know, it was a lot about like who had the relationships with the old school players, but it wasn't like that they couldn't keep up.
But the new school players, you can feel it. When you watch the show, there's a bunch of them that are like, oh, we're not real survivors and we want to prove ourselves to the old school survivors.
Michelle, Nick, and Adam.
They're a little more motivated and playing the game harder, whatever any of that shit means, right? Mm-hmm. So it just seems like they're a little more, they might have gotten together a lot before the show and been like, new schoolers, let's get together and take care, because all that happens.
Yep.
So they might have had a bit more of a plan, and I think the old schoolers probably came in a little cocky and were like, this is our game.
Yeah.
And before anything was going on, they're like, wait a minute, this is not the game we played. This is the game they have played, and we are now we're in trouble.
Yeah. Did it bum you out to not see Aris there as the person who won your season?
No, I don't think Aris... I don't think Aris is one of the 20 best winners.
Mm-hmm.
Aris made one big move in the game, and that was taking me out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean that anything. And he was good in challenges. The game that was driven by Suri the entire time.
Yeah.
There was, what about the guy, the Chris Doherty?
Yeah.
I thought he Wasn't it 5 versus 1? It was 5.
I think
chicks
it might have been
6 versus 1
at the point where he ended up like having this comeback. But he's
a pretty extraordinary winner. Like he was done.
He played a great game. He was never celebrated by the show at any point. You know, as soon as he won, then they had Palau with Tom and Stephanie, and it was like, okay, let's not talk about these guys anymore.
I don't understand why he was not more celebrated, because I thought he had a really fucking he played his ass off and won. Mm-hmm. Does he also not want to play?
Oh, I think he wants to play. I have no idea if they even called him. I suspect that they didn't. I think they kind of knew who they wanted. I think the one person they called and they couldn't get was Cochran. And I think other than that, I think that this was pretty much mostly the people that they called.
Well, didn't they? This fucking goofball, Richard.
Yes, Richard.
He came out with his big video about how he was in and then out and then he got fucked and he was whining and complaining. Yeah. And was he a real chance to be on the show, or is it?
It's hard for me to say. You know that he has, you know, his version of the story, and like so many things in our world, I think it's hard to sort of really get a sense. Jeff said that, you know, they felt like that. No, we've moved on past Richard Hatch. We didn't want him for the Winners at War. I don't think there's anybody. Richard says that he had his bags packed. They called him last minute, but I don't think that there's anybody in this group that was like, yeah, I was on my couch, they called me 2 days before and now I was here. He says they really left him hanging. I don't know, that it didn't sound like the production really wanted him to be a part of this.
Doesn't that seem, when you did you watch the video? I mean, clearly this is what you do for a living. All right. And the video is vintage Richard, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a little bit of this weird peacock on a throne.
Mm-hmm.
Has this idea about how he thinks he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, they didn't, you know, for whatever reason, I personally would have, he was the first winner. So if you could get him, I would have gotten him.
Mm-hmm.
There's also 20 years of whatever, right, going on between people. And I would imagine
there's
that
a lot of history there between him on the show, between him and the show, between him and CBS.
There's some lawsuits.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you can choose those things. And then you can be taken out of the pool, right? Like, so his behavior or his decisions and suing CBS and suing and having things to say, you make those choices, and then those choices, there's consequences, and the consequences of those choices
CBS
are like, dude, we
sued because of him. And
yeah, we don't want you on the show.
Right,
we're done with you. It's the same thing with me. There's choices and consequences. I lay into Jeff. I fucking yell at Jeff. I fucking scream at Jeff. I fucking call Jeff out. The consequences of those actions is that I don't get called and I'm not going to get, you know, a second chance or whatever is going. Like, you have to live with the consequences of your choices. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Rich has a very good understanding of there's a certain amount of self aggrandizement in his brain, where, bags packed bullshit. I've had my bags packed and the day before they said,
well,
you're
you
out.
Really, like, did though. You were right there for Heroes versus Villains. You were the person that Russell got your spot on Heroes versus Villains.
Correct. And they literally called me 24 hours before and were like, you're out. And mm-hmm. that was like, I think, one of the hardest things Lynn ever had to do.
Yeah.
For sure. From what she says. Mm-hmm. By the way, I miss her. I miss Lynn. I really wish Lynn and Jeff would get in a room and get her back, because she was way more than a casting director. She was a producer on that show as well, without maybe even having the credit. I wish they would heal those two people. She deserves to be part of that show. The show needs her.
She found me. I mean, that Lynn Spillman is... Yeah, she saw me in a... I was trying to be on Big Brother. She was in the room when I was there. She had me in the back of her head. And then... when they were looking for somebody they had already cast season 6 of Survivor, but they're like, oh, we need a guy who's funny. There's nobody who's funny here. They remembered me, and then I got a phone call, and then they said, hey, you want to come out to Los Angeles? And then 6 weeks later, I was on the show. And
she really is the greatest reality casting director of all. There's nobody. She's the great. She's the go.
Yeah.
There's nobody better.
And she changed my
life. She found me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how did she find you?
From I put tape? In a tape.
Yeah, you have a legendary audition.
Yeah, I said it in an audition.
Constantine.
I was watching the thing with an actor guy, mm-hmm. and I was like, I want to be on this show. He's watched all 40 seasons. This guy, he's a fucking obsessed super fan.
Yeah.
And he was like, let's get you on. And we had an in to get to, the tape on Mark Burnett's dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
And it got dropped on a dinner table. And Mark Burnett said, I can't see that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a phone number. Cause if I look at it, it'll be disqualified because mm-hmm. of the rules. And so they got it to a casting director, and the yeah. rest was history.
I don't know if I've told you that the thing I love in your video is that there's a point where you say, like, all right, there's two reasons why I'm not going to win. And you hold up like the giant glass of like Jack and Coke the cigarettes.
It was coffee.
It was coffee? Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know what it was. Yeah. But you called it out. And I tell people in their auditions, I'm like, this is like a great thing that was in Shane's video. He's telling you why he's not going to win. He already knows. Like, don't you want to see what's going to happen when you have this guy on the show?
That's true. That was a fun making that.
So you're a dream for casting. All right. We talked about the side that got the jump on Tyson last week. You have any feelings on Tyson?
I just am over Tyson. I think yeah. everybody's over Tyson. Dude, nobody is a professional survivor. The idea that that's what you want to be is weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've never ever wanted to be defined by the show. I think to my detriment, I've made sure that I want to make my own thing.
So that's the last thing that you want to be.
Yeah, the guy is really, and I know like I'll never ever ever consider him an old school player. I know that he desperately wants to be
mm-hmm.
known as an old schooler. He's not like I don't even think I'm an old schooler. I think that anything from 11 to 1 is old school.
Yeah. But you're 12.
But I played on the first season with a weird thing.
Yeah. What was the weird thing? The Terry's
Idol? It was the introduction of the idol. That was the first mm-hmm. season with an idol.
Yeah.
So
they had one in Guatemala, but it was just for one vote.
Okay. It was, yeah. Right. So but this with an island and a thing, it was like a twist. That was when they got away from the original version or the mm-hmm. original thing. The first 11 seasons are old school.
Yeah.
You're old school. Ethan, old school.
Right.
Fucking Danny, old school. The dipshit, old school. Sandra, old school. Mm-hmm. Like these are old, those are old school players. I'm not old school.
Yeah.
There's no fucking way that Tyson is old school. It's not, there's no way.
Yeah. I feel like that they sort of made it heroes versus villains is old school. I think it might be fans versus favorites might be the line for old school.
Do you consider Tyson old school?
So I think that he I see Steven wears the old school shirt. I'm like, come on, you guys are season 18. That's not old school. But to me, that I feel like that Tyson was friends with Rob and you know, it was like you know, seen as somebody who was adjacent to these old school people like Rob and Amber. So I think that he was sort of like more old school by association than you know, old school by what was the first season he played on.
Yeah, there's nothing about Tyson's never played an old school game. Mm-hmm. I've never played an old school game. Mm-hmm. I was the first version of that next thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to do Africa. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even get to fucking play. I mean, that's the gnarliest shit I've ever seen yeah. in my life. He's not
the
old school.
Season.
And I'm glad. How many more times does we have to deal with this guy? Does he come back again?
I mean, somebody's coming back again.
So he is eligible to come back twice.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you think they somehow rig it so that Rob gets in?
I don't think that they rig it that Rob gets back in, but I think that Rob getting back in, there's definitely a chance that that happens. You know, that I talked about in the preseason where, you know, I felt like Rob and Sandra, they're drawing dead, but like Rob could get back in at the final six like Chris Underwood and then go on a run.
And what do you think about that whole, is that when that Chris guy got back yeah, in with yeah. six to go?
So, you know what? If they did the Edge of Extinction and they did everything that they did up until the merge and then ended it, you know, even if it was like, hey, your loved ones are here. All right. You guys get out of here. That's it. Nobody else is getting back into the game. I think that I would be totally fine with that. I think the problem is when you let that person come back in at the end of the game. I mean, wouldn't that be crazy? Like around the time when you're having your loved ones visit in Exile Island, imagine if like, oh, by the way, you know, Nick Carty. Is that the Austin Carty?
Yeah, no, no. Would be like, I think that all of us then would. Yeah, no, I think all of us back then would have been. And again, this is how the game or maybe even society or culturally we've gotten different. Mm-hmm. Everybody on the show would have been like, no, we will all band together.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't win immunity. He's gone. And then we'll continue the game.
Yeah.
That's how I think we would have handled it back then. Now, because Corona cough. If Rob comes back in and there's six left, that's potentially an extremely powerful place to be in because he would be the seventh vote, right?
Oh, he'd come back in when there's five left and be the sixth vote.
Okay, so it's a little less.
And get through two votes and then get to the final four fire making.
Right. Like it just seems really, and again, this is the version of Survivor in which those people were playing, and I understand all that. But hearkening back to a time, I mean, that seems, when you watch the guy that got back in, was that guy a charismatic guy? Was he something that was
He's a nice guy. We didn't really get to know him. If he is a charismatic guy, we didn't get to see a ton of it on the show because he got voted out in the third episode. He got voted out in the third episode. He was gone the whole show and then he came back in the finale and he won.
And they didn't show them on Extinction Island like they're doing now. They were just gone.
They showed them a little bit. But he was not like the star of the Extinction Island season. Yeah. There was other stuff going on.
Do you think Ethan regrets doing it?
He seems like he's really having a hard time on the edge of extinction.
Do you think he regrets doing it?
I don't think so because he seems like he's really psyched about doing it. You know, it seems like that it was important for him to come back and personally, do this. Yeah.
Right.
Like, I think that he might, you know, wonder what am I doing out here on the edge of extinction?
Got it. And in regards to the whole Extinction Island thing and Ethan, do you think... Well, you know what? It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I'm glad for him. I'm happy that he's got his. That's some own personal. I beat cancer and I'm still alive and I'm out here doing it. I'm all for it. It's fun.
Okay. Tell me about. Do you have any thoughts on Kim Spradlin?
I like looking at Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Kim's fun to look at. Kim and my girlfriend have the same sort of. So I'm attracted to girls that look like Kim. I guess we all are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about what she's up to in this game. I don't know if that's from the edit. I really liked her. I really liked her game when she won. She seemed strong.
Mm-hmm.
She ran the jam. Like there was a real empowering thing about her. She's a little lost in the muck for me in this.
Yeah.
Like she seems a little, she's a vote. At some point. And again, maybe they're hiding her. I don't know how any of that shit works. I don't know enough about Edgic, but she's not been...
Edgic.
Well, no, I remember back in the day, like when I was watching my thing, there was like Edgic logic and they were like, there's no way Shane can win. And I'm like, how the fuck do they... And they're like, over the top, OTT, right? All that shit.
Yeah, right. And you probably were OTTN.
I don't know what that means.
OTTN... Over the top. Five.
What's over the top and then
negative?
N is,
over the top negative.
Got it. And what were you?
I have no idea. I don't even know if they did it for my season. I never went back and looked.
Do they do Edgic now?
Oh, they do it now. Yeah, but I don't want to get spoiled. Like I feel like that those people have like the Da Vinci Code.
And you're not allowed to talk to these people after they get voted off, right? Like you're not having Tyson on this week. How has this been for the production of your show?
I'm not allowed to have them on and talk about Survivor stuff. Yeah.
Right. How has that been with the production of your show?
It's fine. I mean, in some ways I like it because I feel like that there's more like, you know, we talk about things like the, we watch the show and then it happens. And then we talk about like what happened. And then like the next day it's like, all right, we're on the line with Shane. So Shane, tell me, like, what were you guys trying to do? Is that a vote split or did you have, and like, oh no, actually, that this was the bup, 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 bup. I'm like, okay, that settles it. Whereas I feel like that now there's a lot more of the podcast is like, all right, so what do you think was going on there? What do you think, like, try to explain, what were they thinking? So,
I will say this for your product. It was always, in the seasons that I've watched, I will remember to myself, and this is a testament to what you're up to. I'll be like, oh shit, I can listen to Rob tomorrow to get the exit interview that you don't get, right? It's, because they're all still,
it's fine, but it doesn't really throw off, you know, we, it's like, in some ways it like makes the other podcasts, you know, we have a little bit more, things to talk about. Whereas the exit interview, you get the answers, but then you know the answers. And so I do think it's kind of fun to sort of try to unravel this stuff.
Wait, who else is left, man? All right. No, hold on.
Michelle.
Hold on. No, we're all over the place. That's how we usually do this. But it's fun because we're interesting. What? Why did Mike not get on?
Mike Holloway.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I felt like he was a fucking lock.
I mean, there's so
what
many people.
What a fucking sweet guy. What a nice, yeah, sweet,
very, very nice guy. I think he's really bummed out that he's not there. And I think that Nick or Ben took his spot.
Why?
I think they felt like, okay, well, we've got our blue collar guys.
Why would Nick take Mike's spot? In what universe is Mike not getting a slot over Nick?
I don't know.
In what planet?
I wasn't in the room. I wasn't sure.
Mike's
a huge fan. What? I think he would have been dying to go there if they called him, but they didn't. They went. They called Nick.
In what universe is Nick being picked over Mike? I mean, clearly the universe we're in, but that's crazy, is it not?
I mean, Shane, I think you're being a little hard. Didn't Nick have a lot of great moments in this season so far, Shane?
I haven't watched. I mean, I've watched this.
That's what I'm talking about.
He's like the other worm.
He said that he had a crush on Parvati.
Correct. He's the other worm. The other worm that got voted out. Thank God that other little worm didn't win.
Who, Adam?
Oh fuck!
You don't like Adam?
He's the big problem with the new Survive, with the new school.
Oh boy,
the moving,
the
malleable,
guy,
the amoeba. I would imagine. I said again, I don't know Adam. I only have a relationship with Adam based on what the show shows me.
Yes,
and I think he's a wormy little freak.
Yeah,
not into him.
No, you'd love him in real life.
I would.
Yeah.
He is the
nicest guy. Would give you the shirt off his back.
I'll meet him someday.
You'll meet him.
He overplays the time.
No, I'm not saying he's not. He's the greatest player. I'm saying that he's a really
sweetheart.
Nice, sweet guy. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll meet him someday. He overplayed from jump.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, dude, slow down.
Yeah.
For 1 second, please.
Yeah. He's excited. Tell me about Michelle. Do you have any thoughts on Michelle?
I feel like Michelle could win. I feel like Michelle is also, they don't do a good enough job valuing who she is. And again, I've never spoken to Michelle. I don't know anything about Michelle. There is a strength to Michelle that is undervalued. I don't know. Yeah. She's no shrinking violet. Like,
no.
I also like strong women. Like, I've always, and every one of these women on this show is not, there are some shrinking violet men, like the Nick, the Adam guy, some other, there's a little bit of a shrinking violetness to even Tyson, but every woman on this show is their own strong. I mean, I love all of the women for that. And I'm not saying that because I got a fucking, I'm not me tooing.
Yeah.
I love strong women. I do.
Michelle, I feel like her story is that she has a chip on her shoulder. She's always disrespected. And I get that. And I understand that about her. And she feels like that people, crap on her win. And she's here to prove people wrong and pray and shut up the haters. And I'm all good with that. But I don't know where she's going next. And I feel like that we haven't, and I feel like you could say that about a lot of people, but I don't really know, what's her direction here in all this.
Well, first of all, I don't know. And again, it's very hard to make a television show.
Yes.
I get that. And I'm not knocking Jeff or Van Wagenen or any of these people. I'm not.
Van Wagenen. Yes.
Okay. Van Wagenen or whatever. I've never met this guy. Yeah. Okay, great. There is something institutionally, and I don't think they did it on purpose and they're not bad people, but there is an institutionally sexist thing that goes with wanting to present her character connected to her ex-boyfriend. Like, I didn't,
her and Wendell, why did they kicked it. Yeah.
I know. Why did I, it felt like they were defining her on the show as like the ex-girlfriend to Wendell, which is institutionally sexist. That's not why she's on the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not why she got asked to be back on it.
Mm-hmm.
She's got strengths and power and has won the money and it has every other right to be on there like everybody else. I don't understand why in my mind I'm like, oh, that's Wendell's ex-girlfriend. And I don't like that they have defined her role or her character on the show as that, because that's how I see her.
Well, I feel like that they sort of like twisted that relationship and I felt like that they twisted it like in a favorable way to Michelle. And I think that's sort of like at Wendell's expense, where I think that Wendell kind of got made out to be a bad guy I don't even think that there's any issue between the two of them, where then I think that, and even though Wendell, I think, got voted out through, nothing having to do with, the relationship with Michelle, I think they were trying to make it present and tell the story that Michelle was, kicking Wendell to the curb in this game. Like, he wasn't a great boyfriend, and now she was dumping him.
Got it. Maybe that's what they were trying to do. All I know is that I have got that in my head when I look at her and I watch her play,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like like what you said, I don't think she really knows. She doesn't know. She's not created for herself in her brain so far what her out is or how she wins. Like, mm-hmm. Sarah knows how she's going to win. Tony has an idea about how he's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle doesn't know. Michelle's still swinging around. Like, I'm going to figure this out. I'm just going to ride. Mm-hmm. I'll stay on the side of the numbers. She doesn't have a clear plan in her head. And neither does Kim. It doesn't seem like Kim has. Mm-hmm. Sophie seems like she has an idea about how she's going to win.
Yeah.
That part is like, those people have ideas about how they think they're going to win.
Okay. And then dare I ask you about Denise and where she is and all this?
I think that Denise was rightly celebrated for that move, right? Yeah. That was a huge move, one of the great moves ever. I do think that Denise will not win and she's in a little bit of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that she's also, I don't think she knows how she's going to win.
Yeah.
Do you at this point?
I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's hard to say. Like, I think you say, oh, well, that side has the advantage, so they'll probably run the table. But the thing that has made what I do so difficult in this quote unquote new school era of Survivor, that we don't really know enough of the story to be able to like say, okay, this happened last week. That's our data point. So the logical thing that will happen this week is going to be, because who knows what the logical thing that's going to happen next week, because we don't know enough about the relationships and we don't know enough about the advantages that are going to come into the game. So it makes it very hard to be in the predictions game in Survivor.
And the advantages themselves, they can just, can they just create something like, okay, we've got 8 left. We can now throw this advantage at them. Do they have the ability to do that?
Or
on the fly? Or
I don't know. They say that they have a show Bible and everything is pre-scripted ahead of time.
Got it. Do you believe that?
I mean, I think obviously some things are, but I do think that on occasion things have been, you know, like, hey, this isn't working, and let's adjust this on the fly to sort of like help out what's going on.
Do you think that they do things in order to help people that they think are making the best television? Within their legal right to do, because again, this is a television show.
Yeah, I would say in the 40 season history of the show that things have been done to help players that are, you know, fan favorites or better television. I don't think that there's a predetermined outcome, but I'm sure like there has been something that was done to help a player that was, you know, a fan favorite or somebody who was perceived to be good television.
Who do you think is going to win?
I think that.
How about this? Who's your four?
Okay, four. I'd say Sarah and Sophie.
For sure.
And then I feel like Jeremy and Tony.
Got it. Okay. So, and who do you think wins?
I'll say I think Sarah has the best shot right now.
You also are you? Do you start to, because this is the other thing that's really difficult now in the culture that we live in the social media age. You yes. can tell who's won and lost or who's lost by their social media.
How so?
Can you not?
What do you see?
There's a vibe. Like, okay, week one, when Rob's trying to sell his shitty t-shirts and his phone calls, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I then deduct, oh, this guy hasn't won because if he had the $2 million in the bank, he wouldn't be worried about a $40 t-shirt, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I know that he's striking while the iron is hot. Yeah. He's trying to fucking sell t-shirts. That was an absolute tell that he hadn't won.
Yeah.
That he hadn't won. There was something Wendell did on his Instagram, and I hit him with I sent a thing, and I don't know Wendell. I would imagine I would like him.
Yeah.
But I was like, there's no fucking way you won. No chance.
What was he doing?
I don't remember. It was there was something, and
so
I was like,
so we look for people with swag, or people on Cameo, and so we should rule them out.
Anybody that's trying to sell anything is a fucking rat. They're a rat because nobody that's trying to sell anything with $2 million coming is not.
I think that there's logic in what you're saying, but I'm sure that there's been somebody who's won the game that is selling something along the way.
What about Hedick? Why do we
Brian
not have
Heidick?
Yeah, is he just too far?
Nobody. Well,
bridges.
I think he was. Again, this is me anecdotally. I think he was a pain in the ass for the production the first time around. He had a lot of demands that with Survivor All Stars. I'm not even sure if they called him, but I think that he was not a beloved person. He had also then some legal trouble after the fact. And I just think that he's one of these people that's like a persona non grata.
You can't shoot a dog with a bow and arrow either.
Yeah. And I don't really know the details of that story. I feel like that. I know he's
especially
like,
especially now. So especially since
anytime.
Society.
Yeah. Listen,
no, but society really, I got news for you. You can kill people, and people are like, whatever. You kill a dog, and the whole world's on
you.
No,
not whatever. Don't kill people, and don't shoot a dog with a bow and arrow.
I'm just letting you know.
Yeah.
You can go kill humans, and people are like,
don't kill anybody.
You kill one pet, and the whole fucking world's after you.
Pets or humans.
That's because most of society is withdrawn and has been traumatized by a fucking relationship with a human, mm-hmm. and so they revert back to getting a pet, and they've put this weird...
Yeah.
Over emotional fucking thing into their animal. I mean, there are people all over this country with really fucking warped relationships with their pets. Period. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you can't shoot a pet with a bow and arrow, Brian.
Yeah, that's a good call.
What who do you think should have been on?
I think there's a couple of people from the older seasons that you would have liked to have seen. I mean, Tina is somebody that you'd love to see her. You know, Vesepia also would have been good to have out there.
Tom Westman, just no interest.
I have no idea. I don't know if anybody's seen him recently. You know I just know from the people that I've talked to who have said, hey, I would have liked to have been there. They didn't call me. I don't know if they, you know, the people that nobody's heard from, if they did get a call and were like, hey, I'm not interested, or it's a bad time.
Did Aris really want to be on it?
I'm going to talk to him on Friday. I'll find out. I'm sure that he would have liked to have done it in a vacuum, but that he's got so much going on with like his company right now. I'm not sure if he can if it's worth the time.
Listen, no disrespect to Aris, but that's his woman's company.
Yeah.
She built that from nothing, and he's riding her coattail with that.
I don't know. Right? I don't know what's going on.
My girl has a wonderful company, and she's making lots of money. It's got nothing to do with me. That's Christie's shit.
Let me ask you a question, Shane, that you had said recently that you were looking to get people together to play a mafia game. We're in the darkness here in terms of Survivor once this wraps up. That I'm looking for, what are we talking about? What are we doing once we get through this? That would you be interested in some sort of a Survivor Mafia game that people could watch?
I think you and I should set that up and do that.
Yeah.
I think that would be fun. We go get 18 of our favorite Survivors.
Yeah. Yeah,
some people I like and don't like. I know you like everybody, right? So that wouldn't be.
I get along with everybody for the most part. And listen, there's a lot of people that don't like me, Shane.
Who doesn't like you?
Oh, there's a lot.
Wait, who's the guy that doesn't like you the most?
Well, I don't even want to antagonize. I'll send you a list.
No. Just give me one name. The one person that really doesn't like you.
Have you ever listened to my interview with Mike White, Shane?
Mike White, that's the guy who's right. Why does Mike White not like you? Mike
Shane,
White got...
Sometimes I come out and my takes are too real.
I got news for you. Mike White was given every opportunity to win that game. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of help.
He lost to Nick.
He lost to Nick. Well, there you go, Mike. That's not anybody's fault but yours. How the fuck do you... By the way... How the fuck does Nick get on this show, A? And B, how does anybody lose to Nick? How does anybody lose to Nick?
Yeah.
Did he have 2 minutes to talk about why he should win?
Yeah, I think he had a lot of time. Yeah.
Isn't he a writer?
Yeah.
And he still didn't get it done against Nick?
I wasn't there. I just wanted to tell you what happened.
I know the Mike White thing has always been very, very tricky. He's incredibly intertwined in the entertainment community.
Yeah.
And it can get a little. Wasn't he Big Brother too?
Yeah, Amazing Race.
Yeah. Then he did the Survivor. The whole Mike White thing. I would argue that he should be ineligible because of the connections that he has.
He did a great job. He was a great player. But he had some.
Wasn't good enough. Mike White. Takes. Hey, Mike White, yourself.
No. He was that. I want him to come on the podcast.
You want me to spend 10 minutes fucking coming up with a rant on Mike White?
No.
I'll go do a little research. He fucks with my guy.
No.
Mike White's going to have a problem with you. The guy lost to Nick. End of story. That's it. Mike, you got a problem with me? You lost to Nick. And then hang up. That's all you got to say. The fuck do you lose to Nick, dude?
Yeah,
you can't ever be taken seriously if you lost to Nick.
Shane, do you have a Tom Brady jersey yet?
This is difficult, man. I've been a Tampa Bay fan since 1979.
It's a Tampa Bay?
I believe there are people calling it Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay has been my team since 1979. I've never seen a home game in Tampa. I got a Sports Illustrated subscription when I was 9. Dewey and Leroy Selman were tackling a guy. We were 7-0. It was my mother gave me it for Christmas. It was the first thing.
Creamsicle uniforms.
The Buccaneer Bruce, the whole thing. And I was like, that's my team. And I've been with them for 50, 40 years. This is an exciting time. There's no doubt. Listen, Tom Brady with those weapons.
Yeah.
And now Gronk. And we've got a better than average defense.
Todd Bowles, that's my old coach.
Yeah, I would argue that we've got to be the third or fourth favorite to win it. Do you not think?
I feel like in the NFC, who's in front? I mean, I again, I'm so checked out of football.
The NFC South is like literally the butcher's it's the butcher's division. You've got Breeze, Ryan, Brady, and then Bridgewater, right? Who's like arguably the best backup in football.
But I think Bucks have the most complete team there.
Well, you got Michael Tom. I mean, that is a gnarly division. Tom Brady played for 18 seasons in a division that was
not great. I mean,
there were like eight byes. Like he had eight teams. He got eight wins a year just for being in that division.
Yep.
He's going to be in some regular season wars. I mean, him and Drew Brees twice a year.
Yeah.
That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. Whenever the schedule comes out, and who knows what the schedule is ultimately going to be, but Tampa Bay is going to have like 13 primetime games.
By the way, that's something that's totally weird to me too. I'm going to be able to watch not that we can't now in today's day and age, but my team has a national profile.
Yeah.
Immediately. Like nice. we are the story of the NFL, which will be very, very fun to watch. Yeah. I hope we win it. It would be great to win one.
It'd be great if they have a season.
How about this? What are the chances of, just sit with me here.
Yeah.
Jeff's in his house in Brentwood.
Yeah.
Or wherever he lives. I'm guessing Brentwood. He's with his wife. He's got the kids. He's looking at the bank account. He's off that fucking wagon wheel of his schedule.
Cycle, sure.
Right? And he's like, I mean, fuck, I got 15, 20 mil in the bank. 40's a really round number.
Mm-hmm.
If I look at the season that we played, it was great.
Yeah.
It's a little bit ridiculous with the coins and the advantages and like trying to keep people fucking glued to the TV. I'm out. Let's fucking shut this thing down. Is that possible?
I mean, look, anything is possible. I just, unless he has something else, I think he's so like driven to be doing stuff. I don't think he just wants to like sit around, hey, what else is on TV now? Like, unless there was like some other project that he fell in love with while he was, you know, on this extended break from the show. Like, I just think he has so much energy that if he's not working on something, I think that he would lose his mind. I think he needs to be, and I think the problem sometimes we have with Survivor is he's putting too much stuff in there. If anything, he needs to and maybe the team needs to say like, hey, we've got a pizza with 97 toppings on it, and now it doesn't even look like a pizza anymore. Let's go back to just like meat lovers, and let's try this one as opposed to, you know, doing so much stuff. So I just don't know if he doesn't have a different outlet. I don't know what, you know, I think he would lose his mind.
Is the survival element of Survivor just gone?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, there is zero having to do with the element and the thing.
It's the edge of extinction, which is rough, but as far as it being part of the show, not a big deal.
And is that because people just don't want to watch people suffering?
I think so. Also, between things with like when they had the Beast Mode Cowboy who almost, died from being dehydrated and different situations.
What happened to that fucking goofball?
I don't know where. Nobody has seen him lately.
BMC? BMC. Did he have a belt buckle?
Yeah, BMC. That's right.
That poor fucking sap.
So it's not as big of a part of the show.
Because they're worried about losing somebody.
I think so. I think it's that they're out there. Like, does it make it 10% more enjoyable for you if they're starving more? Like, I mean, who's really benefiting?
I think a big element of the show, though, was like you'd watch and go, I can't believe these people can do this. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a really...
And now they go up and down a hill.
And then you're on TV and you're sitting and you're thinking like, I mean, I remember watching it going, fuck, I wonder if I could pull that off. Like,
that's
all gone.
It's still hard. Is it, though?
Yeah. Would it be hard for you to go on there? Or would you be like, what is going on? Like,
you know,
this is fucking cake.
The rain is the thing that bothers me. Sitting there for, 40 days, I could do that.
And not eating or the fucking, the elements, that is just, that's
the rain.
No longer.
The rain and the cold, I don't like. But other than that, it'd be fine.
All right, what else?
Let's see. Do you ever think about when you're there in Kasaya and you guys are deciding between Suri and Melinda? And it's like, what do we do? We could vote out Melinda or Suri? Melinda or Suri? You guys let's keep Suri.
Well, I recently have thought about this because I've been watching this show. And I really do believe Suri is the best player that's ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she doesn't have a win, it doesn't matter.
That's not a hot take, by the way. I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of a win or not, like, yes, rings are rings, but she's the greatest player ever.
Yeah, she has at least two fluky exits from the game where...
Well, there was the one where everybody had an idol but her. Yeah, I mean, that's how you got to get her out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's absurd, right? She was a coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
Aris and I had come back from my psychosis and was like, fuck it, I'll stay. And then Aris and I went behind the thing and we were like, okay, who do you want to take out? And I didn't care. Like, they were both going. And so it was just a matter of, you know, I think looking back on it, had I been a little more in my right mind, I would have reviewed both of them and thought to myself, Suri has potentially got more going on than Melinda, so let's get rid of Suri.
Yeah.
And then, but I was still like, fucking, why am I here? And to Suri's credit, there was I've always been like, the idea that it was a coin flip and we got this legend as a result of her winning the coin flip and that's how cosmic the world is and blah, blah. It's still not true because everyone said Melinda, we were deciding and Suri was smart enough to pick up that we were making that decision. And so she got busy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Shit up, going to get wood, doing a thing. Like, she was selling, yo, keep me. I'm willing to work hard. And Melinda was sort of sitting there like on a bump on a log, like sad and depressed.
Yeah.
And we were like, fuck it. We'll keep, you know, Suri. You know, I've always wanted to have this romantic notion of like, oh, Survivor would never have experienced Suri had she lost a coin flip. Yeah. And isn't that, it's not it. We kept her because she was more likable.
And she had her back against the wall the first vote too. She was a super bad situation of four people. And she was able to get the other two women to vote out Tina.
But that was the initial brilliance.
Yeah.
You see it. And then she's fucked.
Yeah.
Like, really fucked. And she just kept her head down. Yeah. She worked hard. You're like, well, she's going to go at some point, but she's just so lovely to have around in this chaos. And she did whatever she had to do to stick around. She's the greatest player ever.
I know you just talked to her on Shane's show. How's she doing?
She's good. We had a nice hour-long conversation. It had nothing to do with Survivor. She's a nurse in New Jersey.
Yeah.
On the front lines.
Yes.
She's a very tough woman. Again, I love these strong broads. I don't know what it is about these fucking strong broads. I love them. She was having a minute. Like, she got a little bit emotional because she was watching people die in front of her from the coronavirus. And that's something, I think there's a little bit of fear. Like, I have to go to work every day and walk into this, potentially bringing it home to my family. But I still got to do this because this is what I do. And then to watch people suffocate to death, which is what it is probably an unnerving scenario or situation for her.
Yeah.
She's doing fine, though. She's going to be all right.
Okay.
She's a strong girl.
All right. Shane, I got to get my kids to bed. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Survivor, the world? You said that you want to have me on your podcast soon.
I do. Well, I had you on the show a few years ago. It was fucking great.
It was a legendary interview.
It was an amazing interview, and we'll have you on this week.
Okay.
We'll call you in this week.
Okay. Well, I had a lot of...
Your babies are done with this.
Yes. Yes.
I see them. They're done with this.
Oh, you see...
They're done with you and I having a talk.
Yes,
I see you looking at
it. I have a visitor here in the studio. All right. All right, Shane, how can people check out Shane's show?
Just go to just type in the Shane Show on Google and you'll be able to find it. It's a fun little hour. It's 5 days a week. We talk about everything from, you know, this, that, or the other. And it's, listen.
Yeah, it's a lot of politics, a lot of news. I get Shane's take on everything that's going on.
A lot of politics, a lot of
pop
culture.
I like to hear what you're saying about stuff.
A lot of news. I think you called me. I think you're very funny. There's the alt-right and the alt-left, and you think I'm the alt-middle, which seems to be really funny and on
point.
Because
there's a lot of spin that goes on in the news outlets. I'm like, I don't even know what to believe. And I'm like, all right, Shane is the voice of reason.
I don't, which is scary.
That's how scary things are.
Completely terrifying. Kim Jong, well, you got your kids. We can talk about Kim Jong-un and death.
Kim Spradlin, yeah.
We'll talk about all that when you come on the show.
Okay.
I appreciate you. I'm very, very proud of you and very happy for you. And go Sarah and go Jeremy. And I'm fine with Ben or Sophie too. Anybody else, get fucking lost.
All right. Shane Powers, thank you so much. We've got the Survivor know-it-alls. Don't mind this person that's walking around behind me, Shane.
Hi, buddy.
Survivor know-it-alls coming up on Wednesday. Rick Devin's on Thursday, and then I'll talk to Aris on Friday. So it's a very Panama week here on Rob as a Podcast.
Wait, Rick Devin's kind of had a thing, right? Was he like a story?
He was a guy. He came back from the edge of extinction, and then he was going to be the person who looked like he was going to win, and then Chris Underwood knocked him out.
Got it.
It was a weird season. The first guy who came back from the edge of extinction looked like he was going to win, and then, all right, now here comes the other guy that just came back from the edge of extinction and knocked out the first guy that came out from the edge of extinction.
And how many people can come back from extinction?
Two.
Just two, and that's a law, or that could change
it
anytime?
It's not a law. They could change it.
Nothing.
they could bring back three.
Could they just bring back everybody? Like,
that's the jury now. The whole thing is the jury.
Now, and those people got paid too, right? There were some appearance fees.
I think so, but I don't know the particulars.
Got it. But those guys all got a guaranteed check for sitting on that rock.
I think so. All right. Here, let me wrap this up, Shane.
Yeah.
This was a pleasure. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Hey, it is former NFL player Ross Tucker from the cleverly named Ross Tucker Football Podcast. And perhaps more importantly, for our purposes right now, the Even Money Sports Betting Gambling Podcast, which, like everything else, is presented by Bet Online. And I am here to give you my top 10 picks for the 2020 NFL Draft coming up on Thursday, April 23rd. By the way, you can bet on pretty much any player where they're going to be drafted. And I'm going to give you some tips on that right now. Just use the code podcast1 at betonline.ag and you'll get, number one, a glorious sign-up bonus, and number two, you'll be able to make the draft even more entertaining than it already is when you place over-under bets on where these guys will get selected. Obviously, I think, number one, the Cincinnati Bengals are going to take the LSU quarterback, Joe Burrow. Would be very surprised if they didn't. Number two, with the Washington Redskins, some rumors about them taking a quarterback. I don't believe it. Chase Young, the defensive end from Ohio State, is an absolute stud. That's who the Redskins will take. By the way, at BetOnline, his over-under is 2.5. So I love the under. Chase Young is going number two. So take that money, BetOnline, put it on the under on Chase Young. Number three, Detroit. Lot of speculation that the Miami Dolphins or the L.A. Chargers will trade up to number three to take a quarterback. I don't think it's going to happen. I think both the Dolphins and the Chargers are comfortable getting either Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama or Justin Herbert from Oregon. And I don't think either one of them ends up trading up. So I think the Lions end up taking another Ohio State Buckeye. That is Jeffrey Okuda, the corner, at number three. Number four, you've got the G-men, the New York Giants. They're either going to go offensive tackle or linebacker Isaiah Simmons. And Dave Gettleman just can't help himself. He loves athletic linebackers. Isaiah Simmons can fly. I think he goes number four. His bet online over-under is 6.5. I really think he hits the under. Because even if the Giants don't take him, I think maybe the Dolphins or the Chargers do if they don't elect to take a quarterback. So I like the under for Isaiah Simmons. Then you get to the Miami Dolphins, number five, and they'll debate Tua Tagovailoa or Justin Herbert in this position. They're going to go Tua. You know, I know there's some medical questions, but there's some performance questions with Herbert. I think they're going to go Tua Tagovailoa and feel like they got a guy who otherwise would have been the number one pick at number five. Number six, it's the L.A. Chargers. I think they're happy to take Justin Herbert from Oregon. 4.0 GPA, smart kid, big, great arm. He's got 5.5 is his over-under for Bet Online. That's a tough one. I guess here I'm going over, but I'm not sure that I'd put a lot of money on the over there because Herbert could go at 3, he could go 4, he could go 5. So keep that in mind when you're making your bet over at Bet Online. Number 7, Carolina Panthers, Derek Brown, the D-tackle from Auburn. His over-under at BetOnline is 8.5, so I'm going under there. Number 8, the Arizona Cardinals need a right tackle desperately. I think they'll take Alabama right tackle Jedrick Wills instead of Tristan Wirfs from Iowa at number 8. So go ahead and take Wills at number 8, the Arizona Cardinals. Number 9, another offensive tackle, Mekhi Becton. This dude's almost 6'8", 370 pounds. And he can move. He's the number 9 to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Number 10, you've got Andrew Thomas, in my mind, going to the Cleveland Browns. They need a left tackle desperately. Started 3 years at Georgia. Very gifted player. His total, in terms of where he'll get picked at BetOnline, is 10.5. So he would be another under there if the Browns take him, as I suspect. Remember, you can place any of these bets at betonline.ag after you use the promo code podcast1. And if you want to hear the rest of my picks for round one, make sure you're listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast and the Even Money Podcast. So then you can make even more bets over at betonline.ag.